Hello again. Now let's look at injection into cyclotrons. So during this lecture we will look at injection, and in the next we will look at extraction. So usually we have an external ion source, and then the beam is taken to a cyclotron along an injection beam line, and the beam must go through the central region, the inflector and the central region, before getting into real acceleration. And here on the left here I have the axial hole to the cyclotron. So this z equal to zero is the median plane, and beam is coming from below in a tube, and here I have tracked some ions on the ellipse, emittance ellipse. And on this right panel here we have a magnetic field. So outside the cyclotron we have one solenoid which gives this kind of magnetic field, and then close to the median plane there's another solenoid, a stronger solenoid, and then this field here is the cyclotron magnetic field. They are all axial fields, and here you can see that this solenoid here gives some focusing, and this gives some stronger focusing, and then this is even stronger. So now the tracking ends at the entrance of the inflector, which then turns the beam into the central region. And before this, we have the injection line with focusing elements. Mostly they are solenoids, like here, and then also four quarter poles. And the beam must be matched here so that it can fit into the inflector. But that's not all. Right here, there are pictures of central region for harmonic modes 1, 2, and 3. We will look at these quite soon. But this is just the front page of this lecture. Forces in the cyclotron. We have the electric fields and magnetic fields. And this is the total force. And as you can see, the electric field, the strength of the force of the electric field is constant. If E is constant, the electric field is constant, and the magnetic field force from the magnetic field, then V cross B is proportional to velocity, so it becomes stronger and stronger. Typically, the maximum electric fields are something like 10 megavolts per meter, so 100 kilovolts per centimeter. If they're stronger, then we start having sparking. And let's take a room temperature cyclotron where the magnetic field is roughly 1.5 tesla. Maybe a bit more, but we just look at here some typical values. And while the particle is accelerated, then this becomes bigger and bigger, the magnetic force. And let's look at the case where the two forces are equal. So this force doesn't change. And then it means that the velocity here is something like 2% of the velocity of light, which means that the energy of the of the particles are, which is around 200 kilo electron volts per nucleon. So at that energy, the velocity is 2% of the velocity of light. And this energy we reach during the couple of first turns. So outside the central region, we can practically neglect the role of electric field when it comes to focusing. Of course, the electric field accelerates the particles, but there's also focusing effect depending on the shape of the magnetic field. Also, sorry, the electric field. Okay, here we have one gap crossing with electric fields. And the three cases here show that A corresponds to a static magnetic field, B corresponds to a field that increases during the passage of the particle here, and C is for the case where the electric field is decreasing. And you can see here that on the entrance side, we have a focusing component of the electric field here and also here, and at the exit side of the gap, it's defocusing. And effectively, in all cases, it's focusing. So for the static field, there is focusing because we have focusing and defocusing and distance between them. And also this is actually weaker because the particle has gained energy. So the bending radius is bigger, although the force is the same. And then if the electric field is increasing during the passage, then this defocusing force is bigger. So then we have this case B. And if the electric field is decreasing, then we have the case C. So there's focusing, and it depends on the phase, RF phase. So whether we have an increasing or decreasing electric field. Here in this picture, the effect is exaggerated, so it's not this big. And then about the center region, we will go to inflectors after this. So here, the tracking for this picture has started after the first gap here. They have been first tracked through the inflector, and then you through this gap, and then end here, and now this tracking starts from here in this picture. So this here is for the first harmonic mode. As you remember, the potential goes through zero when the particle are in the middle of the D. And here, from center to center of the gap, we have 78 degrees. So the voltage that the particles feel when they come to the gap is the maximum voltage times sine of 39 degrees, so half of 78. And if we had the first gap here, then the energy gain would be too little so that the particles could overcome these obstacles here. So that's why we have this nose, so that the phase here, RF phase, for this first gap crossing is more optimal, so that we can get the maximum energy here. And this here is the housing, grounded housing for the inflector, so the inflector is inside here. And these here are the dummy Ds, and this is D1 and D2. And the same for second and third harmonic modes. And here the voltage has been adjusted so that for the case that needs the maximum voltage, we have chosen that, so the maximum magnetic field and the corresponding charge to mass ratio. And there the maximum voltage for the Ds is 50 kilovolts. And now that results for the first harmonic mode into this kind of pattern. So the number of turns is bigger than in the second harmonic mode, and it's even less in the third harmonic mode. So the turn separation here is smallest, and here is the biggest for the third harmonic mode. And if there's some effect on the centering of the beam. You can probably see here some dots here. They are some axial bars, which shape the LSE field here in the gap. So that it gives some focusing. This is how the central region looks like. So this has been taken out. So it's this part here, plus a bit of this dummy D and a bit of this dummy D. And we can see the whole for this third and second and third harmonic mode extraction hole. So it's this here. And the hole for the first harmonic mode is on the other side. And you can see here the pins which shape the electric field here in the gap. And the gap is increasing with radius. It also has some focusing effect. But main reason here is that we can we can have stronger fields here when this gap is smaller. So it's sharper. So it doesn't go inside the D so much. Okay. Another inflectors. There are several kind of inflectors. The first one ever used, that was for the Birmingham cyclotron. It's an electrostatic mirror. The beam is coming here from above, and there's a grid here, grounded grid, and then an electrode at high voltage in plus voltage, because we have positive particles coming here. And then there's an electric field between this electrode and the grid, and it bends the particles from this axial direction to the horizontal direction, to the median plane. This is smallest, but optically it's not so good. The position and the direction of the beam when it comes out here is not optimal. It may be more optimal if we move the beam from the axis a bit to the side. That's more complicated. But let's not go there, because these are not used anymore today. Optically, this is the best hyperbolic inflector. So this kind of gap here, and here we have the reference ray comes out from here. And this shows the projection on the XY plane of this. Optically, this is best because it doesn't couple the two transverse phase spaces. But there's not very much to do here with the geometry. And anyway, it's much bigger than these two others. This is a spiral inflector. The beam comes from above, and then there's plus minus voltage between these electrodes. And as soon as the particles have transverse velocity with respect to the magnetic field, which is axial here, then the beam goes along spiral. This is Will Clevens' idea of an injection system without any electric fields. So there's an iron piece here which shapes the magnetic field, and then it makes the trajectory to go like this. This has more academic interest than the practical interest, because this would work only at a fixed magnetic field, so fixed energy machine. But on the paper it works, but there are no cyclones which use this, but on paper it would work. Okay, now let's look at the spiral inflector in more detail. And in this picture, we have taken away this spiraling effect. We just follow it in this RZ space and follow this azimuthal angle along this spiral. And when there's electric field here, which is the voltage between these divided by the gap, then there's an electric bending radius A. So it makes this kind of curve along a fixed radius and is bent to the median plane. And then in XY plane, it makes this kind of curve here. So it follows this trajectory here. And this gap can be tilted. So non-tilted would mean that in the end, it's totally horizontal, the gap, but it doesn't need to be. So it can be tilted. We can parameterize it with the tilt angle. And now this has two parameters to adjust: the bending radius A and the tilt angle here. And then we can choose how the particle travels in XY plane. So from where it comes out and to which direction. Now we have this kind of coordinate system. We come here down along Z axis, and H axis is the pointing to the direction where the center of curvature is. So the electric field points to this U direction, and V is the direction of the particle, and then H comes so that H cross V is U. So this right-handed coordinate system which goes along the trajectory, and it's U is to the direction of electric field. Okay, here it looks like a bit complicated, but so here we have the X, Y, and Z coordinates, and then the Z coordinate is just simply along this curve here with a fixed center of curvature and bending radius A. So this is the distance along the gap V times T, velocity times time, and this is the bending radius. So this B is the angle then, of course. And A is the electric bending radius. You can easily calculate this. We will calculate it a bit later as well. So MV squared divided by Q. This is the electric field to the direction of U. And then this K here is a function of A, this electric bending radius, and this K prime. And K prime is tangent theta. This theta is the tilt angle, how the gap has been tilted. And here is an electric field. So when the gap has not been tilted, then the electric field points to the U direction, but otherwise there's a component also to H direction when it's been tilted. Okay. So these are the parameters, and this rho is the magnetic bending radius. Momentum divided by charge and magnetic field. And now when we have different case, which of course is a function of these two adjusted parameters, bending radius and is this tilt angle, which gives the K prime, then you can see that we can have very, very many different trajectories on the XY plane. So this is the projection on the XY plane. And this is the point of exit from the inflector, and this and this and this. Of course, this whole system can be rotated. Here, all the trajectories have started to the X direction in the beginning, but of course, the inflector can be rotated. So you can see that we can have very, very flexible way of adjusting the position and direction of the particle beam when it comes to the median plane through the inflector. But there's a phase-based coupling in the spiral inflector. So this is the H prime phase space at the exit of the inflector. It looks quite nice, and this is U prime, the other transverse direction. But if you look at H and U, then you can see that it is not round or ellipse, upright ellipse, it's tilted ellipse. And also in the H prime, U prime, so this is the direction phase. There's also some correlation. And this effectively increases the emittance in the two transverse phase spaces. Now the acceptance of the center region. So this was the housing, grounded housing for the inflector, and the particle for the first harmonic body, it comes from here. And my colleague who did this tracking, he has pointed to some points here with numbers where the beam hits some obstacles. So here there's a vertical wall here, vertical wall here, vertical wall here, vertical wall here, and then these pieces connecting to the upper and lower electrodes to shape the electric field. And this shows what the numbers are very, very difficult to see from here. Starting from, you know, this is the acceptance in phase space, and this was defined before the particle enters the inflector. And if the particles come somewhere here, start somewhere here, then they will hit corresponding places here. So this is a bit nicer way. So this 1, 2, and 17, they are this area here, and there's some others is 18, and this was point number 9, and so forth. And then there's a fitted ellipse here, which can then go in, because we want to have a beam in elliptical form. But now here, it's easy to understand that this is function of phase, RF phase. So what is the phase of the voltage when the particle comes here? If it comes later or earlier, it feels a different electric field. And then, of course, some electric fields caused the particles to hit there, and some electric fields causes the particles to avoid some obstacles here. And in the next picture, or pictures, this is for the first harmonic mode, and this is for the second harmonic mode. And these two pictures, this is the horizontal and vertical phase spaces, and this here is the acceptance, and here's the acceptance, and then the fitted beam there. And if you are 20 RF degrees earlier, then you can see that especially this axial acceptance decreases. And if you have come 20 degrees later, it increases a bit. And in the radial direction, this moves so that these particles will be cut away, and also these particles will be cut away. This is minus 20 degrees and plus 20 degrees. And here is the same for second harmonic mode. The lecture or message of these pictures is that the acceptance is quite complicated thing to define. So we should have a sixth dimensional acceptance, really. Okay. Now we go in the acceleration area, and we can measure the beam with this kind of system. So this probe comes radially in, and the beam comes from here. The beam doesn't go along a circle whose center is in the center of the machine. As you remember, we have spiral sectors and the sectors. So they are spiral and the sectors, and where the field is higher, the bending radius is smaller. So the direction of the beam changes along the beam trajectory. So if you measure the current at these two currents, what these two fingers measure, then we measure the total current. But if we use this just to make a shadow, we measure only from here, then we sort of measure the current density. And these are pictures what we get. So ideally, if this effective probe width was constant, then we would get this kind of behavior. So in the beginning, we can see the separate turns, and the turn separation becomes smaller and smaller when we go outwards. And then there's this kind of peculiar behavior, and then some resonance crossing in the extraction. But this B here, sorry, A here, so this picture here shows the actual case, because sometimes the beam comes from this direction with respect to the probe, and then the effective probe is smaller. And when it comes from this side, then it's bigger, like here. So this doesn't mean that we lose beam here, and then by some miracle we start getting it more. Well, it is also increasing. But if you had the total beam current, then it would be a straight line if you don't have any losses. But what does this mean here? Let's look at those. So this is what we measure. And in the phase space, in the radial phase space, the ellipses are rotating with a frequency of nu r, which is a bit more than one. But we can just see the fractional part of it, because it goes between two turns, it goes one revolution and then a bit more. And when the turns are like this, then we can measure the maximum density. Maximum and also the minimum is smallest, because they are not overlapping. But here they are overlapping, and here they are overlapping. So we can just see that something like average here. And this means that the beam in the phase space is rotating. So it's not really being adjusted to the acceptance of the cyclotron. But we can this is not really a big problem, this one here. But it's of course easier if you don't have this kind of behavior. But now here we have some longer wavelengths, so to say. These here are very, very small oscillations here, and then we have this kind of collective oscillation. And this means that the beam is not centered. This shows the beam at fixed energies, at different energies, and it's a bit off center. So in the center here, we have the static equilibrium orbit, and the beam is a bit away from it, and this is at 8 MeV, whatever the particle is, and I suppose this is proton, but it doesn't really matter. And then at another 8 MeV, so at 16 MeV, you can see that it starts to deform like this. And then at 24 MeV, it's even more distorted and close to extraction. It's a hollow in phase space. So if the beam is not well centered, so it is oscillating here collectively, and since the focusing force here is not linear, then it causes this kind of behavior, and the emittance increases. And to also center the beam, so here the beam is not well centered. We have harmonic coils, so those harmonic coils which are close to the center, so there are three pairs of them, and the sum of the fields is zero, so that it doesn't have any effect on the average field. But there's an effective kick at a given angle. We can adjust the angle where the kick is given by adjusting the currents in the coils. This is the thing that we usually do. And then the same effect is if we have a non-balanced D voltage, so that we have higher D voltage on the one D and lower on the other. So it has the same kind of first harmonic effect. And we can play with the injection so that we can change the injection energy. But there, of course, the energy inside the inflector on the optical axis should be fixed. And this is done with non-symmetrical inflector voltages. So now we'll see how it works. So now this is the spiral inflector in our Z plane. I've taken away the spiraling from this. And this is plus minus voltage here, so that there's zero potential here in the center. And when the beam enters, so these are grounded, these two pieces and these pieces here. And the beam enters here along the center line, then on the center line, the potential doesn't change. So the energy is constant, and the beam is bent here, and it has all the way along the optical axis, it has the same energy. But then if you have non-balanced, like here, we have here higher potential here plus than the minus here, so that on the optical axis on the center line here, there's effectively positive potential, so it decelerates the beam, and then we must have higher energy when coming in, so that the energy here in the middle of these two electrodes corresponds to this bending electric bending radius, and then here it's accelerated again. So we can doing this non-balanced voltages, we can inject at higher injection energy, so that it's the same energy that comes out from the inflector. And if you want to decelerate, have a smaller energy coming out here, then we have it other non-balanced in this way, so that this negative is higher than the positive here. So then the particles are accelerated when they come here to the negative potential, and then they are decelerated again here. So this is a trick what one can do, but this is only for fine-tuning. So that was about injection, and we will stop here and continue with extraction in the next lecture.